Welcome to Sound Off with Lewis Woodard.
How can you not know who Lewis is? Oh, my God. You hear his voice, you recognize who he is.
Wrapping up the day in sports in a fast-paced, high-energy atmosphere. You got an opinion? Bring it strong or don't bring it at all.
I can say anything I want. That's the beauty of this country.
Dial 843-652-3776 or Sound Off on Twitter at 1003TheTeam.
This is a special person.
Now, your host, Lewis Woodard.
All right, we're going to get things started on this Friday by going through a couple of, I don't want to say breaking news items, but things that have happened throughout the course of the day. Coastal Carolina's homecoming game tomorrow against Alabama A&M has been moved forward to a 2 p.m. kickoff. Now, that means on this station, our Bojangles Ultimate Tailgate Experience will be beginning at 11 a.m., instead of 2 a.m. So instead of 2 p.m., rather, we were never going to be going at 2 a.m. But 2 p.m. opening kick tomorrow for Coastal Carolina and Alabama A&M. Now, Coastal Carolina basketball had their opening press conference of the season, which I attended earlier today. And unfortunately, several Coastal Carolina basketball players were involved in a car accident last night. A couple of concussions, no life-threatening injuries, but Siobhan Wiggins, who is projected to be their starting point guard, Marcus Freeman, who could start. He's one of the big men in their rotation. Ron Trapps and transfer Jalen Shaw, who's expected to start and have an immediate impact. So some really good basketball players got concussions last night in a car accident. Needless to say, with the weather going on outside and the roads as they are constructed in Myrtle Beach, it's dangerous out there. So be safe in the hurricane and generally speaking, try to stay out of trouble, folks. 843-652-3776. Now, concussions can happen in many walks of life, as I just mentioned in the car situation, but football seems to be where we are hearing about them more and more and more. And we are heading into a Panthers game this weekend in which the organization is preparing to not have Luke Kuechly again. He is, without a doubt, the best player that they have on their roster, and he has missed two consecutive weeks with a concussion. And it's partially his reserve nature, partially the fact that the organizations don't actually have control over this process anymore. It is, finally, an independent neurologist that has to sign off on Pro Bowl linebacker Luke Kuechly playing again, which is, in my opinion, as it should be. And Ron Rivera earlier this week, when he was addressing the media, and you can hear his back and forth with several Charlotte Observer journalists, Jonathan Jones and Joe Person among them, you can tell that there is a level of irritation here. I'm not sure what level of irritation or why that irritation is caused. Is it because he can't control the situation? Is it because he doesn't have the information? We're not really sure, but Coach Ron Rivera very short in his answers with the Charlotte media about Kuechly's availability.
So he didn't practice again.
Yep, and he's in the protocol.
He's in the protocol.
He did beat with the independent.
He's in the protocol, Jonathan.
He worse off than you guys initially thought.
Joe, he's in the protocol. That's all I'm going to tell you. Because, again, I told you guys this the other day. I'm not the doctor. Okay. I'm the football coach. I'm an optimistic guy, and I go through this procedure just like he is. Okay, so where he is, I don't know.
So Ron Rivera definitely playing the "it's out of my hands" card, and not only is Kuechly unlikely to play this weekend with a concussion, but Thomas Davis might not play with a pec injury from last week. So suddenly the Panthers' normally imposing defense looks a lot less dangerous, but they are taking on a Bucks team that under Jameis Winston is going to be prone to some mistakes on offense. I mean, Winston will turn the football over at some point in that game, and I trust Cam Newton, the offense, to get the W down in Tampa. But it does just sort of underscore this idea that's just kind of, it's nothing new here, that concussions are dangerous and have to be treated with respect. But it is odd to hear an injury and have a coach and a player not really seem in control of the situation or have an idea of when that player is returning, right? If you strain a calf, if Luke Kuechly strained his calf in that game, they would say, okay, he's going to put some ice on it. take a couple of days off. He's going to be on the exercise bike. He's going to stretch some. There's going to be some strengthening activities. And then, you know, maybe in 2 weeks' time, he'll be back on the field. There's a greater degree of certainty. But there's so many scary things about brains that we are learning now that people didn't have 5 years ago, 10 years ago. And someone who's a football lifer like Ron Rivera, you can sense his kind of exasperation with it. But it definitely should be that way. That study that was referenced over and over and over again 2 weeks ago was conducted by Boston University, that of the 91 NFL players who donated their brains to the Boston University study, 87 of them had CTE, which is the dangerous concussion-related disease that causes all those problems with headaches and mood disorders and whatnot. So what I want to know more about that Boston University study is, are the guys that want to donate their brains to the study, are those necessarily the guys that have concussion problems to begin with? Because maybe if a player doesn't have a concussion problem, he's like, ah, there's no reason to give my brain to the university. Or whether that's like just a normal cross-section of NFL players. Unfortunately, I don't know the answer to that question, but it is interesting to watch a star player that we expect to come back sooner sort of get caught in this no man's land in terms of whether he can or can't play, and have someone totally unaffiliated with the situation have that ultimate call. And I think because of how hard it is to monitor this situation and how long it can take sometimes for the damages to really appear in somebody's life, I think it's a great idea. I mean, we can't take a look at our own brains, right? I mean, if you hurt your calf, you can tell walking around that your calf is busted. If you get some kind of contusion, you can look at your leg and say, okay, that thing is black and purple. Maybe I shouldn't play today. You can see all of these signs, but with our brains, we can't see them. So it is weird as a Panthers fan seeing the best player that you have and you have no idea when he's coming back. I mean, you would assume after Tampa there's a bye week that he could come back in 2 weeks, but it should be noted that sometimes football isn't the most important thing going on in life. And I don't want to see Luke Kuechly, when he's 80 years old, have migraine headaches all day and talk about how he wishes he didn't play football. And that therein lies a lot of the problem with this situation that football finds itself in, is you can take all of these steps that weren't taken 10, 20, 30 years ago when guys were playing football. Like maybe Luke Kuechly against the Jaguars goes in on the next series if that game were played 10 years ago. Maybe he does. But how long is it going to take, and how do you possibly prove that Luke Kuechly's quality of life is better 10, 20, 30 years from now because of the care that they're taking right now? I don't know that you can ever prove that. I mean, is it going to take another batch of 90 brains to be handed to Boston University in 50 years to say, okay, only 40 of the 90 players have CTE that donated their brains to get research? I mean, it's one of those things, like, of course you want to treat it with the highest degree of care, but at what point in time will they actually know if it's making a difference? I mean, again, it's not like a torn ACL, up, the surgeon goes in there, repairs it. Next season's probably going to be good to go, probably going to have the same amount of explosion back. I mean, so much of this is, it's just, I don't want to say conjecture because that makes it sound like they don't know anything that they're doing, but it's just crazy to sort of watch it from afar and not know whether it's going to work or not. And I know everybody thinks that, a lot of people think that football is in trouble in terms of popularity with youths in this country, but I mean, football players are as popular as ever, man. I mean, random people play fantasy left and right. I mean, the hero worship of football is not going anywhere. So I don't necessarily think that the scary concussion story every now and then is going to have all that much of an impact.
That and the money.
Yeah. I mean, the money, I mean, well, you can take a look at Floyd Mayweather and the money that he's making, but that doesn't necessarily translate to the rest of boxing or youths getting involved in boxing, right? Baseball players, I mean, Giancarlo Stanton, who a lot of people outside of Miami might not know who he is, signed a $312 million contract, right? So, money is being made in other sports too, but the visibility of football is greater than ever. I mean, that Thursday night game last night, that was a horribly played football game. I have no idea how the Steelers blew a 20-7 lead. Well, I mean, I guess I could walk through all the 10, 15 reasons why that happened, but that would be bad radio, laundry listing them. But that was an ugly game. It was a really ugly game. And there were still 19.2 million people that watched it last night, which is going to be like double a World Series game. Football, NFL, and college is the only sport where consistently sports fans will watch games in which their favorite teams are not playing and it's the regular season, right? Like, I'll watch baseball when a team I care about is involved or it's the playoffs. Same thing with the NBA. Same thing with college basketball. I mean, I'll watch every North Carolina regular season basketball game. I'm really not going to watch a Big 12 basketball game unless it's the NCAA tournament. I mean, maybe if it's number one versus number five. If Kansas and Baylor are playing and it's a top 10 matchup and it's 9 o'clock on ESPN, I like the commentating crew, yeah, I'll pay attention to it. But in general, the most exciting part is the NCAA tournament, the end of the season, when it doesn't involve your team. But all of us were watching the Steelers and the Ravens last night, regardless of whether you were a Steelers or Ravens fan. Also because the college game was atrocious. Al Golden does not have as much staring power as apparently Joaquin does outside. In the Hurricane power rankings, Al Golden is near the bottom right now, I'd say. I'd say he does not have too much time left in Coral Gables if they care about wins and losses. But I don't even know where I'm going in terms of, that's not really a participation topic. I suppose everybody knows concussions are a problem for football. It just is crazy to see Luke Kuechly caught in limbo like that. And you expect a guy to miss a week, but you don't. I mean, the Twins, Justin Morneau, probably missed 80 games one year with a concussion. And I know there are probably a lot of baseball fans who are like, hey, isn't this a football problem? When's this guy going to come back? Oh, well, he's got a history of concussions in his lifetime. If he gets another one, he could be severely impaired mentally. So that's why they keep him out for 80 games. Every once in a while, you see something like that happen, but you do feel like more often than not, somebody gets shaken up and then they take a week off and they're back. With Kuechly, you're hoping that he comes back after the bye week. Really, you hope he does what's best for his health. But it's crazy, though. His body works. Like, you see him running around. You see him jogging at practice. You see him doing non-contact drills. And he probably wants to play, but they've got that independent neurologist that makes the final call. You heard Rivera in that clip saying the protocol, the protocol, the protocol. This is the five-step concussion protocol, abbreviated. Step one, rest and recovery. That means the player cannot go to meetings. They advise them not to look at electronic devices. You're taking someone's phone and computer away from them. I wonder if that actually happens, by the way. I mean, who can live without their cell phone? Like, if I can't find my cell phone, like, if it's just missing in my house, there is a degree of panic in my chest that, like, that is unnatural. Like, it totally, these cell phones are taking over our lives.
I mean, especially with these guys, I'm sure they have TVs in every room of their house or wherever they're staying. I mean, you can't walk in, like, even if I came into work, there's a TV sitting here on the wall, I have to go on the computer. Like, this day and age, it's pretty hard to completely avoid an electronic device.
Okay. Well, you're supposed to do that in step one. Let's hope that we're going to put you through the protocol, Brian, if this ever happens. But right now, we're allowing you to look at
devices. I'm
being
the protocol forever.
Yeah. Well, actually, I need to find someone else to produce the show if you can't look at screens. So maybe we're going to tell you to man up. And you're allowed to do stretching. Phase two, you're allowed to add in light aerobic exercise and attend meetings. They'll let you, phase two of the protocol, they'll let you on the exercise bike and you can start meeting with the linebackers. If you're a linebacker, you can meet with your coaching staff, you can watch a little bit of film. Three, they allow you to add in strength training. Okay, so you're allowed to lift weights in phase three of the protocol. In phase four, you're allowed to do non-contact drills. Then five is full clearance. That's where the independent doctor that's not employed by the team has to basically interview you, talk about what you're going through and your symptoms and decide whether or not it's okay for you to go out there and get tackled again. And I wonder how that varies on the high school and the college football level. Like Cliff Ellis was talking about that today, Sean Clear's basketball coach. I mean, those players are going to miss practices. I mean, he's going into practice today without four players that he thought he was going to have, and they only have 30 practices from the official opening of practice today and Hawaii. When they got to fly out west and start their season, they got Jalen Shaw, impact transfer. They need every practice they can get with that guy so he can get integrated into the lineup. They can build chemistry with him. Fortunately, they all went to Cuba together. But who knows with those guys when their brains are going to be okay to practice. It's not as simple as taking a look at an Achilles tendon and saying, okay, the swelling has died down. Let's stretch it for a little while and you can be back out there next week. I mean, every injury has some degree of subtlety to it. It's just terrifying when it involves your brain because you can't see it. There's no way you can take a look at your brain probably without dying, right? Who's gonna into your head and look at something without there being problems. Now, I know that there's CAT scans and MRIs and whatnot, but I don't know to the extent to which those are effective looking at brains. Anyways, 843-652-3776. Going to take a look at the college football slate coming up next segment. There are a lot of impact games. Who, in your opinion, do you think will be eliminated from the college football playoff? And that's a tricky question because some teams can afford one loss early if it's to the right team. Some teams, I don't think, can afford an early loss. We'll get into that next segment. And coming up at 5:40, I believe we are going to have the head coach of the Conway Tigers, Chuck Jordan, the best team in the area as of right now, on the phone. But he is in transit right now up to Notre Dame at Clemson. So he's using his bye week ride. He's going to watch some high-level college football. So we'll see if the service is all right, and Coach Jordan answers his phone. We'll have him on at 5:40. It's coming up next on Sound Off.
Welcome back to Sound Off. Call 843-652-3776 and get loose.
All righty, welcome back. Lewis Woodard, Brian Nelson, hanging out with you guys. You heard the voiceman, 843-652-3776. Going to go through some of the college football slate this weekend and see if I think there's going to be anybody eliminated from the playoffs. You guys can weigh in. Hit up Brian on the phone number. We'll let you on the air. There is a crazy allegation against Louisville's basketball program that I just read on Twitter during the break that we're going to get into in the tail end of this segment because it's simply too good to not talk about. So if you're into college teams getting into sort of sordid NCAA scandals, this is going to be the next big thing. This is going to be the next thing that people are talking about over the next couple of months. With the slate this weekend, there are a number of games that really jump off the page. Alabama, Georgia, Notre Dame, and Clemson are the two that just look awesome on paper. West Virginia at Oklahoma is kind of sneaky interesting as well. But Bama at Georgia, Georgia is favored by like a point and a half point, depending on what line you're getting, where you're looking it up. And I think that that actually is a game that Georgia can lose, but Alabama cannot. I mean, if Bama picks up their second loss, I don't really see them making it into the college football playoff. I suppose we haven't seen a two-loss conference champion try to get in because last year all the conference champions had one loss and the four that got in through a conference championship game, and Baylor and TCU were oddly tied according to their league office. So the Big 12 got squeezed out. So we don't know with Nick Saban, with Alabama's brand, if they got hot. If they lose this game and then just ripped off a bunch of wins in a row and went on to win the SEC, whether sitting there at 11-2, whether that would be good enough to get in, I would imagine that a two-loss conference champion would get really scrutinized. I wouldn't see that getting in. However, Georgia could lose to Bama, and I don't really think the rest of the SEC East is anywhere near as good as Georgia. I think Georgia could lose that game and still get in. But I actually do think this is an elimination game for Alabama. And I'm going to share my picks on that in Top Games of the Week in the final segment. Also, Notre Dame at Clemson. I think, per that conversation we had earlier in the week, I think that this is an elimination game for Notre Dame way more than it is for Clemson because they do have that extra game on their schedule that isn't there. I mean, they don't have a conference championship game. And while they do have some tough games on their schedule in general, if you're looking at them at 11-1 instead of 12-0, and the rest of the teams in the country are playing that final weekend, they're not going to have a good closing argument. Whereas Clemson could lose to Notre Dame. It doesn't count against them in the ACC standings. They could still run the table, be 8-0 in the ACC, and beat whoever wins the Coastal, let's just say Duke and Charlotte, and have that final game. So I think that they would actually be fine. West Virginia and Oklahoma, I think the loser of that one's out. I mean, I just don't think, with the lack of a Big 12 championship game, I think those teams have to have a clean sheet. Same thing if Baylor were to lose to Texas Tech. So what I love about college football, the relevancy of the regular season, the fact that you must watch whether it's your favorite team or not, we really see that in full force this weekend. Like Ohio State was able to lose early last season and get back into it because they won the Big Ten in the long run. They were able to get hot after they lost to Virginia Tech. We're getting to the point this season where it's debatable whether or not someone can sustain a loss and still move forward. Oregon and Florida State had clean sheets going into it last year. Right? I mean, whether or not you can sustain that loss, that's a question that We don't exactly know. And Alabama was able to sustain one loss last year to Ole Miss, but they closed hot. They won that high-profile Iron Bowl. They won the SEC championship game. But I think this time around, we haven't seen someone with two losses get in simply because we're in year two of this experiment that's known as the college football playoff. But looking at this, I think that there are going to be some good teams that get eliminated this weekend. Other subtle games, I don't want to say subtle, but other games out there. Ole Miss is going on the road to Florida. I think this is where McElwain's luck runs out as an undefeated team, and I think Ole Miss ends up getting that one. Because they're vastly more talented, in my opinion. And Mississippi State's playing Texas A&M, another ranked-on-ranked game. But with all those SEC teams, that list right there, Ole Miss, Florida, Mississippi State, and Texas A&M, none of those teams have lost yet. I think that at this point in time, they could all sustain a loss so long as they were to close out. 843-652-3776. We got JC on the line. JC, what do you got for us?
Lewis, how you doing, man?
Doing well, my man. What's up?
I tell you what, I think, and I know that this is going to sound biased being a Gamecock, but I will try and explain myself. I think this could potentially be a playoff buster for Clemson if they lose. I think you and I are on the same page about Florida State, that win potentially not meaning as much by the end of the year as it might mean right now with their ranking. I think Florida State could potentially lose multiple games. They don't look like a nearly as good a team as they were last year or especially the year before. So if you look at Clemson, if they lose to Notre Dame and run the table, a lot of the wins that they thought might be decent or good wins, that Georgia Tech win, you know, if they beat Tech, it's not going to look as good as it might have 3 weeks ago. You know, Duke, David Cutcliffe is an amazing coach and he's done an amazing job at Duke. But that Duke win is not going to be the same as if Georgia beats Ole Miss or LSU or if LSU beats Georgia. I think you're looking potentially at Georgia. Honestly, I believe Georgia is the clear favorite in Southeastern Conference to get to Atlanta, to get to the playoff right now. Because I agree with you. If they lose to Bama and win out and then win the SEC championship game with one loss, I think they're in the playoff. And so then you get to the issue of, is there a second SEC team in the West with one loss who didn't play in the conference championship game? Because then you've got a one-loss team, potentially an Ole Miss or an LSU, who could potentially sneak in there. You've got either Ohio State or Michigan State from the Big Ten. And then you'd have to think that TCU, because of its preseason ranking and last year, or Baylor, or maybe even the UCLA from the Pac-10, would get a nod over Clemson because of the strength of schedule argument. So, you know, I'm looking at this because, and this is nothing, and for the Clemson fans, listen, Clemson can't control that South Carolina is a horrible team this year, and so that a road win wins Bryce isn't what it was in 2013. They can't control that Georgia Tech has looked abysmal on offense for long stretches of games against both Notre Dame and Duke. They can't control that. And so I think, unfortunately for them, this is potentially a playoff buster for them. And I'll let you talk about that a little bit more.
Yeah, JC, I hear what you're saying. South Carolina and Florida State have potential to not be the South Carolina and Florida State games that Clemson's had on their schedule in years past. I mean, Clemson had 2 years in a row at the end of the Taj Boyd era where they had as much NFL talent on the field as anybody in the country, and those were the two games they lost, right? South Carolina and Florida State. They couldn't beat top 10 teams, but they beat everybody else ragged. This year, with Everett Golson's consistency early in the season, we don't know how Jimbo Fisher is going to be able to use him later on, and we don't know if Florida State's going to be as dominant. I mean, Boston College has the number one defense in the country, but a lot of that right now has to deal with who they've played. Florida State wins comfortably over them, but it's not pretty. Do they not win prettily because Boston College is a really good defense? Or is it because Florida State's offense is struggling a little bit right now? So we don't know how Florida State is going to look down the road. NC State, JC, you did not mention NC State on Clemson's schedule. NC State could be a sleeper now because that game is going to be in Raleigh, and NC State easily could be undefeated going into that one. I like Jacoby Brissett as a quarterback for NC State, and I think they're kind of a sneaky team right now. But in general, Clemson, if they lose this weekend against Notre Dame, they will have the, oh, ACC, it's a basketball conference vibe going about them. Florida State was undefeated last year, and they were defending national champions, so it was a little different. They didn't have that asterisk because it's like, okay, Florida State's got a clean sheet. They won it all last year. They had proven it. But if Clemson loses this weekend against Notre Dame and then runs the table and some of those teams don't look as good as they once did, Georgia Tech, South Carolina, among them, they're going to have to win with style points. I mean, Ohio State last year, they didn't get in because their quality of wins were necessarily better than TCU's or Baylor's. In large part, they got in because their last four or five games of the season, it seemed like they were romping everybody 50-0. Now, they had a tight run-in with Michigan, but when they went into the Big Ten championship game and ran Wisconsin off the field, I really think that that helped their cause. So I wouldn't necessarily write off Clemson after a Notre Dame loss based on some of the other teams and their schedule not being as good as you thought if they do beat them, because let's say they go to Charlotte and they play Duke. If they run them off the field, then that's going to be the last impression in the selection committee's eyes. And there are a lot of NFL players on that Clemson team. I mean, there are a lot of guys, Deshaun Watson, Mackenzie Alexander, Shaq Lawson, guys that I think are just next-level talent. And if you see them visually beating a Duke team ragged, then I think that would really count for something. But you are right, JC, to point out the fact that their schedule, as of right now, is not looking as good as it would at the beginning of the season. And whoever wins the ACC, we're presuming Clemson or Florida State at this point, because the two of those teams have run the conference for the last few years. Whoever they face out of the Coastal, I mean, I'm saying there's at least a 60% chance that's an unranked team, right? Duke's lost to Northwestern, and they've actually looked pretty good. If Duke starts playing consistently week in and week out, they've got a really good defensive line. I think that they could be a 20-25 kind of team by the time they go to Charlotte, but Georgia Tech, I don't have a lot of confidence in. They've lost back-to-back games. North Carolina, as much as I would love to hype my Tar Heels, they allowed close to 300 rushing yards from Delaware last week and have a quarterback controversy on their hands. Miami's not good. Virginia Tech's not good. I mean, that Coastal Division, once again, is an absolute mess. I think it's Duke for the taking. The question is, I guess, hypothetically, would that Clemson team at the end of the schedule get that much credit? I mean, they would have to beat Duke ragged, I think, to get those style points. The committee is probably going to say that that doesn't matter, but the last impression of something you have counts for something, right? If the very last thing you see of Clemson is like Ohio State last year, dominating in a conference championship game, that counts for something. And I'm sure the committee would say that that wasn't necessarily a factor, that they looked at the weight of the entire season for Ohio State, but you can't tell me that what they did to Wisconsin in the Big Ten championship game, their style points, you can't tell me that wasn't a deciding factor. Texter writes in, a college football experiment. The guy from Dr. Pepper invented that last year, and it worked really well. Those Dr. Pepper commercials are really annoying. Should I, Brian, producer of this program, should I eliminate college football experiment as a phrase because those commercials are so annoying?
I'm not sure if I'm familiar with the commercial.
Are you serious? The sloppy looking stadium worker guy that's walking around talking about the trophy and whatnot. Anyways, they annoy the heck out of me. They really do.
I normally change the channel until I find something that's not a commercial, if a commercial comes on the channel I'm watching.
Well, Brian, we're not going to encourage that kind of behavior in our listeners. They're going to stay right here because we have great content planned throughout the course of the show. Louisville is the college program that is looking to be in a lot of trouble right now. Louisville, there is a book being released right now, and I guess you should take it with a grain of salt when there's a book confession, right? Because someone is clearly making money off of this proposition. But a woman who claims to be a Louisville area madam says that she arranged for players and recruits to have escorts the Louisville basketball program, sometimes the liaisons occurring on campus. So Rick Pitino is going to get a couple of calls now from the NCAA office about this book that's said to be published soon. I mean, Pat Forty with Yahoo is picking up this story and reporting on it, right? If it was a total no credibility clown show, these major entities wouldn't be picking up this story right now. So I guess a crazy allegation is going to show up in headlines, but I mean, that's some crazy stuff. I mean, basketball program graduate assistant arranging with a Louisville area madam to provide escorts for recruits and players on campus. That is the kind of story. We haven't heard something that salacious since the Nevin Shapiro stuff at Miami.
Nothing really surprises me anymore. I kind of just assume it all happens.
I mean, would you ask him, if you asked me, like, is that possible that something like that would happen? I wouldn't bet money that it wouldn't happen, but that's crazy. I mean, that really is, because anytime you're guarding a big time secret like that, and there are a lot of people that are in the know, whether it's players, whether it's the madam, whoever is the liaison that's carrying the money in between, all it takes is you firing the wrong person for them to spout off. So I always look at information.
Or just some young, like if they're saying recruit, so then some young high school kid going back to his hometown and be like, oh, guess what the Louisville, whoever set it up, did for me.
Yeah, I mean, I heard a really secondhand allegation about a major college basketball program paying a top flight prospect cash. I'm obviously not going to mention that on the show. I'm not going to put my credibility on the line and say, oh, so-and-so gave so-and-so a duffel bag full of cash. But you hear those stories constantly. But this would be a different level in terms of college basketball and football scandals that we've heard recently. Like, that would really put North Carolina in perspective a little bit. The fake classes people that seem to be really riled up. But 843-652-3776 is the number if you want to hit us up later in the program. We are going to try to hit up Conway head football coach Chuck Jordan right now. His Tigers are 5-1. There are many, many things we can talk to him about, and namely his team's hot start, whether or not the light is turning on, what a joy it must be for him to coach such skill talent, Brian Edwards, the Gamecock commit among them. What he's doing in his bye week besides going to Notre Dame Clemson. And you know what? He is kind of on the front lines with his concussion stuff because he's seen the game change and evolve in his decades at Conway. I'm really interested in his take and perhaps how differently they are treating head injuries now versus 15 or 20 years ago. Hopefully we hit up Chuck Jordan, head coach of Conway football, next. This is Sound Off. Back on Sound Off Sports Radio 100.3 of the team, I'm Lewis Woodard. Joining us now on the phone line, Conway head coach Chuck Jordan. Coach Jordan is on his bye week right now, and from what I understand, on the way up to Notre Dame and Clemson. Coach, I hope that the roads have been safe. Any reason in particular why you're checking out that game?
Well, my son is up there, and we're trying to just get an opportunity to go up there and see him. He's actually helping out with them, and so we want to go see a good ball game.
Oh, absolutely. I know a lot of us are excited about watching that game as fans. Now, take me into the life of a high school football coach a little bit here. Do you have time to watch some of the games on Saturday?
Well, usually I do watch some afternoon games on Saturday, but very, very seldom do. Very seldom do we get an opportunity to go to many games. Like I'll go to PC and Coastal next weekend because PC is my alma mater and know some people playing up there. But don't get to a lot of college games.
Mm. Now, Coach Jordan, one thing I'm interested in your input on, we opened up the show today talking about concussions and specifically in regard to the NFL right now. A lot of Panthers fans in the area are seeing a good chance that Luke Kuechly, the all-pro middle linebacker, doesn't play for the third consecutive week. I'm just wondering how maybe that process has changed since you've been coaching football at the high school level.
Tremendously. First of all, you know, there's a lot of talk about how to take the, you know, the head, leading with the head out of it. And, so we're constantly trying to study and learn, et cetera. But I've got the solution. If they just listen to me, I can fix all of it. And that solution is to take the face mask off the helmet. Because if they take the face mask off the helmets, they won't have any more daggum concussions.
Now, there are a lot of people that have said that in rugby, the style of tackling is way cleaner and more technically sound because guys don't have headwear. Do you think is that where you're going, that the tackling technique would improve?
Yeah, I'm obviously being a little facetious about the face mask, but we are now employing that style of tackling. It's called Hawk tackling, and it is a rugby tackle, and we're utilizing that now. And it is a teaching process, and it does take some time simply because it's different. But I really do like it, and it teaches to lead with it teaches kids to lead with their shoulder and not their head. And yet, you can't totally take the head out of everything.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, I think any time that you teach techniques contrary to leading with your head and sticking your nose in there, it's got to be a positive.
Now, Conway head football coach Chuck Jordan joining us right now on Sound Off. I'm Lewis Woodard. His Tigers right now sitting at 5-1 in their bye week before they get started with Region 6 4A play next week. Coach Jordan, how and when did you make that decision to change your tackling technique?
Well, we've been studying it for a while now. And hold on a minute, Lewis.
All righty. Alrighty, we're gonna give Coach Jordan a hot second here. Oh, Coach, you okay?
Yeah, I'm good.
Hey, it's the beauty of live radio. I'm sure everybody listening craned their neck in a second there to see how much longer actually, that process was gonna unfold. So I don't think we've lost any of our audience. We're good.
Yeah, I actually locked my truck and my wife was still in there and I was intending to hold her hostage, but
yeah,
she tried to get out.
Child lock, something like that. I understand. So I'm interested, and I've heard a lot about this rugby tackling technique that you just mentioned, Coach. I believe the Seahawks are at the forefront of that, and perhaps Ohio State as well. I was reading about it in the offseason. So when did you guys implement that?
Well, we actually worked with it in spring, last spring, and we have pretty much that's our teaching technique now, and that's what we've done the entirety of this season. And of course, the concept is just leading with the shoulder. You have to have different leverage points, and it's just a little different technique is all.
Gotcha. Now, Coach Jordan, your team takes the victory bell back to Conway last week with a 25-22 win over Myrtle Beach. What's it mean to have that back at home?
Well, you know, honestly, Lewis, I didn't think much of the victory bell for a long time because my first 25 years at Conway, I think maybe Myrtle Beach won one or two of those games. And so it really was not a big deal. But then they've been cutting our butt for the last few years. And then it becomes a little more important to you. So I think it means more to me now than it did certainly earlier when we weren't exchanging it back and forth.
Now, I'm sure you want to beat Myrtle Beach as much as any other team you're facing, but Mickey Wilson, of course, as most people understand, the head football coach of Myrtle Beach, did, in fact, play for you back in the day. What's that like being matched up against someone that used to coach or perhaps seeing someone that used to coach have success on the sidelines themselves?
Well, you know, I want to see Mickey be successful because I still feel like he's one of mine, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, when they're on the other sideline, you really don't see it that way. You know, they're the other team. They're the enemy. And so it's not as much a personality thing as it's just the other team, the opponent, the one you got to beat.
Absolutely. Now your team is 5-1 right now. The last time you spoke with us, you were saying that the light hadn't turned on yet. Everything hadn't quite clicked. Since then, you had an impressive win over Myrtle Beach. You had an impressive win over Marlboro County, and you put a lot of points on a Hartsville team that typically does not allow a lot of points. Where do you feel like you are on that process now?
Well, we're heading into our region, and certainly, you know, one of the things that I've always felt to be true is that you can't play your best football all year long. It's just very difficult to get at that level and maintain that level in terms of the focus, intensity, and all. And so it's okay that we're not where I want to be right now. Just hope you can get there. We're still making a lot of mistakes. We're still giving up some big plays on defense. We're not securing the ball like we need to. Those are things that we can improve on, and I hope that we will. But no, we're not there, and we're not playing our best football yet. We haven't really put together four great quarters of football, and yet I look forward to doing that on down the line. Not yet. So we'll see if we can become that type of team. And as a coach, you really don't know. You just have to kind of live it and see what transpires.
Now, Coach, next week you've got West Florence, and region play begins, and that's for all the marbles. That's how the playoffs in large part are determined. But this week, how much did you spend looking at West Florence versus working on Conway?
Well, we tried to, particularly early in the week, just work on Conway. You know, because at the end of the day in high school football, if you can keep from beating yourself, you've got a chance to win just about every ball game. But we spent the early part of the week working on Conway, and then the latter part of this week we have spent on West Florence just to get ourselves up a day or two on them and hopefully have a little slight advantage in terms of preparation.
Mm-hmm. Well, Coach, congratulations on getting that victory bell last week, a 25-22 win over Myrtle Beach. I appreciate you joining us as always, and have fun at the Notre Dame-Clemson game, all right?
Yeah, I plan to stay wet, so we'll see how that goes. But anyway, thank you, Lewis. Appreciate the job you do.
All righty. Appreciate it, Coach. Actually, that's as good a time as any to reference that tonight our Mr. Sparky's Friday night wrap-up, instead of being from 10 o'clock to 11:30, as it usually is following Carolina Forest football, there is no Carolina Forest football tonight because, like Conway, the Panthers are on bye this week. There is no live football tonight in the Grandstand. Everybody played either last night or is playing on Monday. So what we're going to do with the Mr. Sparky's Friday Night Wrap-Up tonight, we are going to run it from 8 to 9:30 p.m., and we're just going to run through coaches in the Grandstand. We just talked to Chuck Jordan, so he's obviously not going to join us again tonight. As much as I like Coach Jordan, I don't think he wants to hang out with me twice on the same day. We're going to have Doug Yilling, head coach of Sox D. We're going to have Mickey Wilson, head coach of Myrtle Beach, Bradley Adams, head coach of Georgetown, Jamie Snyder, head coach of Loras, among the guests that we're going to have. So that's 8 to 9:30 if you're interested in more high school football coverage right here on 100.3 The Team. When we come back, an embarrassing moment that a lot of us dread. When it happens, do you claim it or do you not claim it? An NFL coach went through that at a press conference today. This is Sound Off. Back on Sound Off, Sports Radio 100.3 The Team. I'm Lewis Woodard. You know, we began the show talking about concussions with Luke Kuechly being the subject and how it's really unclear when the Panthers all-pro middle linebacker is going to come back and how it's in the hands of an independent neurologist. And this process fascinates me for so many different reasons. I mean, not only am I interested in when the best player on my favorite football team comes back and plays, but the way that the information and the style of treatment is changing right now is really curious to me. And also the fact that there's so much money and so much interest in football right now, you think there has to be a way that they can make it safer to play from a head injury perspective. And I thought Coach Jordan of the Conway Tigers, I thought his approach was very interesting as well. You know, Ohio State hits a practice all the time, and they practice rugby-style tackling, and they think it's safe to do so. And then you take a look at the Chanticleers here, Coach Moglia. I'm sure next time I talk to him, I'm going to ask him about rugby-style tackling, if it's something they've investigated, if it's something that they employ. But under no circumstances does he hit in practice, because he thinks that the drop-off between first string and second string, especially in his program right now, is so great that why would you even think about risking it? So the way that different people are approaching the same prospect is interesting to me. I mean, some teams, I mean, the Seahawks and the Ohio State Buckeyes feel like they can hit all the time because of the way that they've taught tackling technique. And that's what's going on right now in Conway. And by the way, I know it's high school football. It's not the same as college football. Guys aren't getting run out of town as quickly. But after back-to-back 2-9 seasons, there are a lot of people that were ready to say adios to Chuck Jordan, and he's having quite the rebuttal right now. 5-1, having just beat Myrtle Beach and going in with as good a shot as anybody is winning his region. So a really cool comeback story for the Tigers this season. And you do wonder, like, hey, is their defense playing better because those guys have better tackling fundamentals? It's worth asking. Worth asking that question. It also helps when you have the most talented football player that I've ever seen at the high school level. Granted, I've been covering high school football for 3 years, but that's still a statement. Brian Edwards, his wide receiver, is a stud. Now, going to go through our top games of the week before getting to the embarrassing press conference moment that I teased before the break. Top games of the week this week, we've got four college, two professional. I am 18-6 in top games of the week against the spread, so I'm feeling okay about this, but I'm looking at this week's slate and a little uncomfortable with it. West Virginia at Oklahoma. Oklahoma favored by 6.5. I took West Virginia. West Virginia, not only are they undefeated, but they're blowing teams out. I know that their slate hasn't been the most difficult thing ever, but they have been winning by large margins, and I think that number, 6.5, is just too much. Although it's going to be a shootout, I get the feeling for. Anyways, I'm taking West Virginia. Number's too big to me. Ole Miss at Florida. We've got 7.5 point favorites, Ole Miss on the road. Florida has been playing some of these ugly, gritty games. I see the same thing happening. I see Ole Miss winning, but I'm taking Florida with the points. Alabama at Georgia. Very rarely do you see an Alabama team lose two straight. Very rarely do you see them play between the tackles football with against a pro-style team and lose. So I'm going Bama, just shrugging and saying Saban confidence, man. Sometimes you got to make a pick that way. Clemson at Notre Dame, pick 'em. I'm worried about some things for Clemson. I'm worried about how good the Notre Dame offensive line is in a game in which the passing game might be affected by the weather, right? If it's wet, sloppy, and rainy out there, it might come down to who can run the ball better and who can win at the line of scrimmage. Notre Dame's got a really good offensive line. That said, give me the home team in this scenario. I'm taking Clemson because it's a pick 'em. Carolina at Tampa, 3.5. Carolina is favored by on the road. I hate the hook, but I am going to take the Panthers here. Whether they've got Luke Kuechly, Thomas Davis or not, I think they've got too much for the Bucks. And Minnesota, Denver. Denver's favored by 7. I hate NFL games in which the number is 7. I just hate it. Minnesota has played well back-to-back weeks. AP looks like he's back doing his thing. So give me Minnesota with the points there plus 7. Top games of the week, check them out, facebook.com/1003 the team. You pick against me, Aaron, and Pat from the morning show. You beat all of us. We hook you up with free movie passes. Does not cost you a thing to play. facebook.com/1003 the team. Now, Jim Tom Sula has been widely criticized in, for his his behavior at interacting with the press in interviews, but this might take the cake. This was his press conference earlier today.
Nothing but respect for
him. A lot of examples in football history of good quarterbacks losing their confidence after things are...
And you're wondering, wait a second, did the head coach of the 49ers just do this?
Nothing but respect for
him. A lot of examples in football history of good quarterbacks losing their confidence after things are...
That is what it appeared to be. He didn't claim it, by the way. I feel like if that happens, no matter what situation you're in, I think that just ethics-wise, I think you have to claim it. Jim Tom Sula.
And it's less embarrassing when you claim it.
Making more mistakes. I mean, he didn't claim it, guys, when you're in that situation. It happens to the best of us like once a year. You just gotta claim it, man. It's all happened to us. If you're saying it hasn't happened to you, you're lying.
You fart on TV on national TV.
Not on national TV, but I'm sure someone has heard it in an uncomfortable situation. All right, before we run out of time, call of the day.
It's time for the most coveted prize in North America. Sound off call of the day.
JC does not think Clemson's schedule is strong enough to lose this weekend and still make it to the college football playoff.
Clemson can't control this. South Carolina's a horrible team this year. And so that a road win wins Bryce isn't what it was in 2013. They can't control that Georgia Tech has looked abysmal on offense for long stretches of games against both Notre Dame and Duke. They can't control that. And so I think, unfortunately for them, this is potentially a playoff buster for them.
Yeah, I hear what JC is saying, that the South Carolina game, the Florida State game, the Georgia Tech game perhaps might not have the worth that you thought at the beginning of the season, and I think they might have to have some style points. But I think if they win out and win in dominating fashion the ACC championship game, I still think they have enough horsepower to get in. But again, that factors into the rest of the college football season, who's undefeated, who's not. All right, fun weekend of college football. We'll be back here Monday at 5 o'clock. Stay tuned for Sports Talk. That's coming up next on the team.